You're listening to the Growing Leaders Podcast, episode number 14. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Growing Leaders Podcast. Once again, we've got Dr. Tim Elmore in the studio with us, and we're following up on a recent podcast that we did, which was off his blog post, The Three Huge Mistakes We Make Leading Kids and How We Must Correct Them. Today, we're going to dive into more of the solutions. So now that we've created these problems, Tim, why don't you share with us how we can fix them?
Well, I think I must be getting to be known as this guy that thinks the parents of this generation are just horrible parents. We're not. I'm a parent, too. I think we are a very engaged group of caring adults, whether we're a parent, a coach, a teacher, an employer, a youth worker, youth pastor. I believe we're very engaged, but I think we got so engaged that we did create some problems, unintended consequences to our style of leadership. For instance, we've all watched before parents trying to control their children, filling their schedules with structure, rules, and goals to meet. Their hope is that if they just push them hard enough, those children won't embarrass them or be underachievers. On the other hand, we've also seen teachers trying so hard to be hip and relevant in the classroom that they leave students laughing. While the faculty members may be in midlife, they're acting as if they're forever 21, you know, that sort of thing. And everyone around them sees the incongruency except for them. Again, we've all seen coaches, athletic coaches, trying to lecture their way into the hearts of their young players. And they often become frustrated that the attention spans of their student athletes are about 4 minutes long. It's that classic old school leader with a new world team. And so in light of that, this podcast is about a handful of ideas that I would give to help us correct those mistakes we've made and to really right-size our leadership as teachers, coaches, and parents. So let me jump right in with this list of ideas. And again, I always encourage my listeners, eat the fish and spit out the bones. If this works for you, great. If it doesn't, just spit it out and we'll go on. But here we go. Idea number one could best be summarized with this phrase: don't think control, think connect. Let me say that again. Don't think control, think connect. I think too often our ambition as a parent or teacher is to seize control. We want to govern every action and direct every step. We don't want them to make a mistake or fall or fail or whatever. So we're control freaks sometimes. Not all of us, but very often what we really are after is control. And you and I both know, Jim, control's a myth. We are not in control. We cannot control these children, no matter how hard we try. And even if we do, we're not controlling their spirit on the inside, their will, if you will. Studies show that parents who overprogram their child's schedule often breed kids who rebel as teens. Why? They never got to truly be a child. And again, control is a myth. So here's what I would say. For this one, the pursuit of connection is far superior. If I will connect with my kids, seek conversations, be safe, be approachable. If I'm a teacher, seek connection with the students. Now, certainly we need to do more than just connect. But if I'm pursuing connection, I probably am going to have the conversations that lend me influence in their lives and not will help me control them, but at least have greater influence than if I sought control. So don't think control, think connect. The second right sizing I think we need to do is we need to stop thinking inform and think interpret. Again, don't think inform, think interpret. Consider this fact. I've said this many, many times. This is the first generation of kids that doesn't need adults to get information. It's coming at them 24 hours a day as they remain connected to their phones and their laptops. They have lots of information. What they need from us is interpretation. Their knowledge often has no context. They have a lot of information in their brains, but they don't have any context for it. In fact, I love what one man said. They have content without context. They lack the wisdom that comes only from years of experience. So adults must help them make sense of all they know, to help them interpret their experiences and relationships and politics and work and faith. And we need to give them a balanced perspective. So they don't need us to access information, as Leonard Sweet says, but to process information. So I would encourage you to discuss together what's behind movie plots when you go see a movie, or books or technology. Teach them how to think. Our goal must be to provide them with a healthy worldview. All right, that's number two. Let me give you number three. The third right-sizing or change I think we need to do to correct our mistakes is this. Don't think entertain, think equip. I have literally seen parents who become so absolutely consumed with entertaining their children, keeping them from being bored, if you will, because boredom is a four-letter word. It's a cuss word for kids. So they're really into entertaining their child. Keep something in their hand. Keep something, some screen in front of them to keep them their minds occupied. Otherwise, they turn into trouble. There's actually a website in my community that furnishes moms with places to go keep their kids entertained and happy. Now, there's nothing inherently wrong with this. But I know teachers who approach their classrooms the same way. Despite desperate to be popular with their students, they do anything to keep their kids entertained. I frankly think a better perspective is this. How can I equip my young person for the future? I think if I give them relevant tools to succeed and get ahead and they realize, oh, this is helping me, they'll stay engaged. Happiness then is a byproduct. It's not a pursuit. So we must move from busying them so they're happy to enriching them to so they're fulfilled. I think true satisfaction comes from growth, so we got to be about equipping them. Here's number four. Don't think do it for them. Think help them do it. You know, for years, I don't know if it was Home Depot or Lowe's, but the big phrase was, you can do it, we can help. That's the mantra I think that parents need to use, and teachers too. You can do it, student, and I'm going to help you. Adults have been absolutely, once again, committed to giving kids a strong self-esteem for over 30 years. We've wrongly assumed, however, that it would come simply from telling them they're special and awesome. We kind of covered that in our last podcast. According to the American Psychological Association, the APA, healthy and robust self-esteem actually comes from achievement, not merely affirmation. And in our attempt to provide everything they want, we've actually created a new at-risk child, middle-class and affluent kids who are depressed because they didn't really do anything to achieve it. In fact, Jim, I want to underscore that. The new at-risk community is not the troubled child that has no money or no daddy. That's clearly an at-risk kid. But the new at-risk kids is this affluent, upper-middle-class kid that's got all the iPhones and iPads, and they're lost as can be in terms of knowing what life's about and having a purpose, and I feel like that's what we've failed to give them. So we must teach and parent for the long term, not the short term. Sure, it's quicker to do it yourself, but it's far better to transfer a skill. Here's number five. Don't think impose, think expose. Now, this is huge. Don't think impose, think expose. Kids have been given options since they were preschoolers. I mean, I often tell teachers and parents, think about it. Your kids have been weighing in on where the family goes on vacation since they were 5 years old. I mean, they've been voting on everything. They can hardly watch a reality TV show without voting. So sometimes we attempt to start imposing what we want. We start letting them weigh in, and really what we want, again, is control. So we impose something. In fact, when they go awry, we quickly want to put boundaries back up, fences, guardrails. And while mandatory conduct is a part of life, it often carries negative baggage with it. When students feel forced to do something, they usually don't take ownership of it. In fact, if anything, they dig their heels in and kind of rebel. If I have to do it, even if it's good for me, I don't want to do it. I don't want to eat my vegetables. I don't want to mow the lawn. I don't want to take out the trash. So bottom line is, I think we need to give them opportunities that they can't pass up. I learned this from parenting my own son, Jonathan. For years, I had said, Jonathan, I want you to do this. Jonathan, I want you to do that. And they were good things. I knew they would be good for him, like broccoli. But I would notice he really didn't own it. He didn't want to do it. And you know, I thought, why could you not want to do it? When I started shifting to saying, Jonathan, tell you what, you don't need to do this, but I'm going to go meet with so-and-so. He's a really cool guy that actually does X, Y, Z. Man. In fact, I just took my interns to meet this guy. They loved him. But you don't have to do it. It's up to you. But if you want to go along, all of a sudden, it was a whole different feel, whole different tenor and tone. And his thing was, what time is that? Because he knew he could miss it. I created scarcity. You may not make this. And it's your call if you don't. And if you don't, I'll tell you about it. In fact, that's what I did. When he chose no, man, I poured it on. I said, man, you would have loved this. Then I walked away, but he started wanting it. I tell you what, when we create ownership in kids, we have done something really, really good. Number six, don't think prescriptive, think descriptive. Now let me say it again. Don't think prescriptive, think descriptive. You know the difference between prescribe and describe. So many kids today, in my opinion, have had everything mapped out for them by an adult. In fact, by the time they graduate school, the syllabus is no longer there. Oh my gosh, OMG, what do I do now? You know, that sort of thing. Because some adult has given them the prescription for every minute of their day. Now, I'm probably overspeaking, but you get my point. We have prescribed what they should do. I think, again, the problem is they've not learned to come up with what to do. In fact, sometimes I want to tell younger kids, hey, turn the video off, go outside, pick up a stick, and make up a game. You know, I mean, just do it for yourself. But no, recitals, practices, video games, playground time, lessons, phone games, even Legos. Think about it. Remember playing with Legos when you're growing up? We play with Legos. Today, Lego sets now have diagrams of what to build and how to build it. Now, again, there's nothing wicked about this, but you see, we're prescribing. We're actually telling. I think a kid needs to say, I got a bunch of bricks in front of me. I have no idea what to do. I'm going to make up a castle, made my way. This is going to exercise parts of the brain that don't get exercised when there's all prescription. So here's the difference. When you describe what you're doing is you're saying, here's a goal. Here's an outcome I want you to reach. Now use whatever creative juices you want to use, but you reach this goal. You go for it. I think you can do it. It's in you to do this. But I'm not going to prescribe. I'm going to describe. All of a sudden now, they're owning their methods. Once again, they're engaging in the process. It's their deal. Quite frankly, to summarize it, kids need adults to set meaningful goals, but we do too much when we give them each step they have to take along the way. This is where we can begin to develop some of their own ambition and creativity. Okay? Let's do number seven. Number seven is simply don't think protect, think prepare. Don't think protect, think prepare. Now, I need to add a caveat here. Of course, you'll want to protect your children. In fact, you probably just thought I'm some sort of heretic for saying don't think protect. I think we got the protection thing down. My goodness gracious, I've said it before. We put knee pads on them and helmets and safety belts and safety seats and everything else. They've gotten the protection thing. The problem is we've so focused on protection that now they're perhaps not taking steps, risky steps like we talked about before, because we haven't talked about the future. I shifted gears in my own parenting style and teaching style when I decided to stop being consumed with all the be safe, be safe, be safe. And I started thinking, I want to get you ready for the world that awaits you. That was preparation. I'm starting to think long term. But I tell you what, this is hard for us. It's very hard for caring adults because we're living in a world of child abductions and Columbine high school massacres, and there's only been dozens since Columbine that have happened. The spread of terrorism around the world. We are now paranoid about the safety of our kids. Schools, churches, homes take precautions to prevent anything bad from occurring. But all of this preoccupation with protection has diminished them. And again, when I wrote the Generation IY book a couple years ago, 60% of college students were moving back home, according to Monster.com. And the latest number was reported recently by the Baltimore Sun. 80% of kids last year's senior class planned on moving back home after college. And I think it's we didn't get the job done in preparing them for the future. Their greatest gift a parent can give their child is the ability to get along without them. Okay, three more to go. Number eight, don't think tell, think ask. Now, certainly there are going to be times when you have to tell your kids what to do, to tell your students what to do. But I think many kids grow up with adults telling them what to do every hour of the day. And their lives, again, like I said before, have been scheduled thoroughly, structured tightly, programmed by adults. And this can disable them. They never had to do it. In fact, I talk to teachers now that they just say, the kids say to the teacher, just tell us what the answer is. Just tell us what to do. And teachers get frustrated, but we've conditioned them to ask these questions. In fact, the hands go up in class every day. Is this going to be on the test? All they want to do is, let me do the bare minimum. Just feed it, spoon feed me, and I'll get it. And again, I'm thinking this is their downfall. They're not ready for the autonomy, for the freedom. They don't know how to self-regulate because we've always been doing the regulating for them. And that's why it's important that as these young people mature, especially, for adults to be doing more asking than telling, to lead with questions. The greatest leaders in the history of the world, including Christ, led with questions. Who do you say? All the time it was great probing questions that got the follower to think for themselves. Brilliant. Now they own the journey rather than just saying, Mom, what should I do next? It's their decision, not the adult's decision. And when we lead with questions, quite frankly, we force them to think and choose on their own. Number nine. I know this seems kind of cheesy, but don't think cool, think real. Don't think cool, think real. This was actually sparked by a student conversation I had. I had a conversation with a college student that basically, here's what he said to me. He said, Dr. Elmore, the only thing worse than being uncool is being unreal. And when I had him unpack it, here's what he was trying to say. So many grown-ups are trying to be hip and cool and wear skinny jeans and, you know, get something pierced somewhere on their body where it's flabby. I don't know, but it's just not working. And I can only imagine in 20 years when they turn 60, what this is going to look like. But here's my point. They don't need cool from adults. I mean, certainly stay relevant, certainly understand the culture, stay up with the times. But what they need from you is to be real, not cool, to be authentic. If you're 45, be a 45-year-old and be relevant and say, here's what a healthy adult looks like in midlife. I can show you. I'm actually living that life. Rather than trying to get a bunch of tummy tucks, skin, facelifts, whatever. And by the way, I don't mean to offend you if you got a tummy tuck or a facelift, but let's make sure that the insides are healthy and we're real and we're transparent, we're honest, we're authentic. And so that we've given them a picture of what life can look like decades from now by a healthy grown-up. We need to be self-aware. We need to know our quirks and our blunders. We need to be able to laugh at ourselves when that's appropriate and let them see what life should look like years later. The last correction or amendment I would make to these mistakes that we often make is simply this. Number 10, don't think lecture, think lab. Don't think lecture, think lab. Think about it. Remember science class in college? I'm sure you do. Remember, science class was divided into two parts. There was the lecture and the lab. The lecture, for me, often was the boring part. It's where the professor stood up front, opened the textbook, and went blah, 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 blah. But the lab, ooh, I mean, that was kind of the cool part. You know, you got Bunsen burners and test tubes, and you blew things up. You actually got to do what was in the textbook. And that's the key. You got to do what was in the textbook. I don't know any kid today that's looking for another lecture. I just don't. Nobody's looking for a lecture on morals and ethics and character and leadership and so forth. But I do think they're saying, could I try it out? In fact, I think when we give them experiences where they can try it out, they're open to the talk because they go, OMG, I don't know what I'm doing here. So start with the experience, then give the talk. Start with the experience, then have the conversation. There's no doubt about it. When our young people do the wrong thing, the first thing we want to do is give them a lecture. I mean, I'm just being honest with you. It's the quickest way to transmit an idea, but it's not the best way to transform a life. So I would suggest travel to new places, meet with influential people, do service projects together with your kids, watch movies and unpack them afterwards. When you go to an amusement park, talk about what you learned. I don't know. It seems crazy, but I think all this experiential stuff can lead to some great conversations where learning actually happens, but it started with a lab, not a lecture. So bottom line is this. Worldwide, psychologists are discovering the downside of our obsession over kids' self-esteem, safety, and happiness. I want to be a leader, teacher, and parent that young people see that's made these corrections, that are doing this interpret, not inform, expose, not impose, and somehow they're pulled along rather than pushed along to become the best version of themselves. And that is my wish for you as well.
Thanks for giving us some great ideas on better ways we can lead our kids. I love what you said, that the greatest gift a parent can give their kids is the ability to do life without them. I believe when we truly understand it and embrace that, we can then begin to understand our role as leaders better. In other words, it provides the goal that we are trying to achieve. I want to challenge you to write down those 10 ways that we can lead our kids better that Tim just shared. Look back over that list and pick an area that you know that you already do well in and think why it is easy for you to lead in that way. After you learn why it's easy for you, I believe that knowledge will help you in the other areas. After that, pick one area that you know you need to grow in and focus on it for 2 weeks. I feel confident that you will see growth in this area as a leader. If you're interested in learning more, you can purchase a copy of Artificial Maturity from our website, www.growingleaders.com. This book shows us how to create authentic adults by adjusting the way that we are leading as adults. This wraps it up for today. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Growing Leaders Podcast. Thank you.